When did you first hear about the incident?
Wednesday morning, I guess that was the 28th of March, the day that it happened. Okay. We were in the office here, oh, I think it was around 10 or 11 in the morning, somewhere in that vicinity. Mm-hmm. And reports began to come on the radio, and we were notified by Dean Goldberg that we ought to tune into this, that I think in his words, there was something happening that we ought to be aware of that perhaps had implications for the college. Mm-hmm. And he instructed us what station to listen to and so forth, and then they were talking about what had happened.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you know that the reactor was there before the incident occurred?
I really wasn't particularly aware of it, no. Okay. In fact, when they said Three Mile Island and mm-hmm. indicated it was in the Susquehanna River and so forth, I had no real idea exactly where that was. It was obvious from the way they were talking that it was in the vicinity of Harrisburg, but I couldn't have told you if it was 100 feet downriver or 20 miles.
Okay. What did you think about or talk about at that time when you first heard it?
I remember being initially concerned. You get that little jump in the stomach, you know, when something like this happens, and thinking, just what is all of this? What are the implications of this? And then the initial reports were relatively reassuring. They pretty much indicated that the situation was not that serious. And once that report came across, I tended to, at that point, to believe that. Mm-hmm. And we pretty much went on about our regular business, giving some thought to it, but not as a tremendous concern.
So you didn't really think it was a serious situation, a crisis type of situation at first?
No, I guess there were a couple reasons for that. The radio report was, as I said, was rather reassuring. So were the news reports that first day or so. Mm-hmm. And the second thing was that the discussions were underway here at the college with senior administrators. And mm-hmm. They seemed to feel that there was no particular problem at that point, given what we knew at that point. So it looked as though it was just one of these things that was going to be fairly quickly resolved and not amount to anything really significant. So Wednesday was just another day, really, except for the few minutes where we first found out about it, and it was kind of an anxiety-producing situation immediately.
Mm-hmm. So after you first found out about it, did you start to seek out further information about it?
Well, I made myself aware of what was going on as a matter of course, that is, listening to news reports when they would talk about it, reading the accounts in the newspaper Wednesday night and again on Thursday. My normal practice is to be pretty aware of what is happening in the world because I'm interested in it and I just like to know what's going on. So I read a couple newspapers a day as a regular routine. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I didn't really do anything out of the ordinary to try to find out about what was happening. It just seemed to be something that was going to make news for a couple of days and disappear at that point.
So you did follow newspapers and
yes.
radio and TV and that kind of thing. Do you remember any particular sources that you followed?
Well, it would have been the Carlisle Sentinel and the Philadelphia Bulletin, which are the two papers that I regularly read. Mm-hmm. And other than that, nothing really in particular comes to mind. I'm sure that I probably watched one of the regular nightly news programs at 11 o'clock, which I usually do, and radio news when I was listening to radio and so forth, although it's hard to really remember specifically then, and many times I miss that kind of a thing because I get busy with work, you know, obviously I work a lot during the evenings and things, and sometimes I don't get a chance to watch the news on TV, or to listen very much to a radio during the course of the day. So I don't remember specifically having listened to a particular station, but I probably did at some point on one of those first 2 days.
Okay. Did you talk about the incident with family or friends?
Very little.
Co-workers?
At that point, very little. Obviously, by Friday or Saturday, everybody was talking about it quite a bit.
Right.
But the first couple of days, I discussed it with Dean Carson. We discussed it briefly in the office here, and the secretaries were listening to the initial reports on the radio, and we talked about, questions were asked, what does this mean, what's going to happen, and, my response was, well, I'm not really sure, but everything seems to be under control. I don't think it's anything to really worry about. Discussed it with, well, mostly inside the office here. At that point, there were very few inquiries, even from students. There might have been one or two during the course of that day, or Thursday. But the level of anxiety wasn't much, really, until it began to drag on and appeared to get worse on Friday.
What did you think about the media's handling of the situation?
The entire situation?
Yeah.
I think probably the media did more to create the problem than any other single thing. That is, obviously the incident happened and the media didn't create that. But I think they created most of the misinformation and hysterical reactions that did occur. I think they were guilty of a great deal of sensationalism and probably made the situation far worse than it needed to be.
Okay. Do you think that government officials handled it well or any differently from how?
My personal opinion is yes. I think they did. I was particularly impressed with Thornburg and his handling of the situation. I felt that he was on top of the situation. He inspired confidence in me. I never felt like he was overreacting to the situation, but I never felt like he was out of touch with it or underreacting in the sense of, not really knowing what to do or appearing very indecisive and hesitant. And I also felt that in his case in particular, he was, he did a very good job of depoliticizing the whole thing, if I can use that term. What I mean there is that it would have been very easy for him to have immediately started pointing fingers and accusing this organization or that regulatory commission of botching things up, in the interest of his own political gain and so forth. And I think he handled the situation in a very low-key manner. His criticism was not a shotgun approach. It was, it was directed precisely at where it needed to be. And his whole attitude seemed to be one of, we've got a crisis here. Let's deal with the crisis, and we'll investigate it later, and we'll do it in a rational manner, and not overreact to the situation and just get into a real shouting match, trying to blame this person or that organization. I was very impressed with that. I thought he did a real nice job with that. And the officials from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Denton in particular, I think inspired a lot of confidence. That's been pretty obvious on a widespread basis. A lot of people felt that he was the most trustworthy person on the scene, someone that inspired a fair amount of confidence. And I think he did his best to be honest and open with the public, to to minimize the feeling that a lot of people had that they were being lied to, or that a lot of things were being covered up. The situation might have been even worse than it was had someone like him not been there and handled it in the way in which he did. Those are my basic impressions. I think the other officials, the non-government officials, people like the Med-Ed people themselves, were deplorable in the way they handled it. And, well, Med-Ed, for example, I think was much more interested in their public image and in trying to minimize the impact of all this for their own financial situation than anything else. I think the indication that they gave less than five or six days after this happened that customers were going to have to pay for it, when they hadn't even, in many cases, returned from their self-imposed evacuation, was about the nadir of public relations that I've seen in a long time. Just handled extremely poorly, and just indicated a basic callousness and lack of regard for the public that I think was really deplorable.
Was there anybody that you found particularly reliable, whose word you trusted more than anyone else?
Not any one person really stands out. I think both Thornburg and Denton, for the reasons that I've already covered. I think they were both very, they were very open about the situation, attempted to meet it head on, and never gave the impression that they were covering things up or trying to give a false impression to people. And I think that gradually inspired more and more confidence, not only in me, but also in a lot of other people who really were in the dark about the whole thing, very ignorant, understandably so, and wanting to be able to trust somebody. And of course, the media, every time you turned around, there was a different story from one media source or another. So I would certainly say that those two people. And I think President Carter, when he got involved in the situation on Sunday and visited Three Mile Island and made some of the statements that he did, also exercised a calming influence. I think his particular approach to it was believable also. In general, I guess I tend to be skeptical only when there appears to be good reason to be. And so I had a fairly high level of trust in what most of those people were saying anyway.
Okay. How about someone you mistrusted?
Med-Ed.
Med-Ed.
I never believed anything that Med-Ed said. I think on a more closer to home basis, too, I think President Banks and Priscilla Laws and John Luttrell Schwab were extremely helpful to the Dickinson community because of their particular expertise and knowledge, and of course because of the unique circumstances having John Luttrell Schwab live right in the vicinity of Three Mile Island. That had a very believable effect on the entire college community, at least those who stayed around long enough to really listen to what they had to say instead of packing up and moving out. And all three of them, I think, did a very, very fine job in keeping the Dickinson community informed of what was happening and in reducing, again, the tendency to overreact into a more hysterical kind of reaction on the part of any of us.
Did you feel that the officials in charge were in control of the situation?
Yes, as much as they could be.
Did you feel that way at the time?
Yes. Okay. I certainly felt that way about the people here at Dickinson. Mm-hmm. I think that the decisions made were proper. They were made with the best information available, and again, that it was the proper kind of reaction. People were right on top of the situation, but didn't overreact to it. I never got the feeling that the whole effort that we had here was anything but organized and concerted and put together in the best interests of the welfare of not only the Dickinson community, because we were not operating in a vacuum here. We had to consider the impact, for example, that the closing of the college would have had on the community of Carlisle. And maybe even further than Carlisle itself, because it would have been reported that, you know, Dickinson had closed up and run, in effect. And so there were a lot of difficult, fairly complex kinds of decisions to be made with what amounted to fairly limited information in a lot of cases, or conflicting information from all these different sources. And I felt the leadership was very appropriate and decisive on this level. On the national level or state level, I felt pretty good about the leadership in most cases until it became apparent 5 or 6 days into the situation that very few people, even the technicians on site, really knew what they were doing or how to react to this whole thing. And then I think you have to separate this out. I suffered a kind of a crisis of confidence in the whole situation from the technical aspect. Mm-hmm. That, well, if these people don't even know what they're doing, how are we supposed to know what the implications of all this are going to be? Mm-hmm. And at that level, I had some real misgivings. But at the level that when you talk about the leadership that people exhibited during the situation, I thought that was pretty good. Again, Thornburg and Carter and other people who gave the impression, and I think it was a real impression for the most part, that they were on top of the situation as best they could be, making decisions in an appropriate way. And being decisive about it.
How about Med-Ed officials? Do you think they were in charge of what they were supposed to be in control of?
No. I think they're the ones more than anybody who probably lacked the leadership style and direction that I think is appropriate, and that I think they tried to cover a lot of things up. They tried to downplay the situation more than it should have been. And obviously most of the people didn't know what they were doing in trying to handle the crisis. Mm-hmm. Although that came out more later than right at the time. But even during the crisis that lasted really about 48 hours involving the hydrogen bubble, mm-hmm. First it was going to explode, and then it wasn't, and then it was getting smaller, then it was getting bigger, and then stories began to come out, well, we really don't know what we're going to do with it. Mm-hmm. I think that was a rather trying time for everybody, and certainly did not, their particular response to this didn't inspire a lot of confidence. Mm-hmm. When it became apparent that they really had no idea what was going to happen or how to get rid of this thing or what to do about it.
Do you think they might have been, has your opinion changed, and maybe you think now that they were in control, or do you still feel that they were?
No, I still feel pretty strongly that they were not in control of the situation, and many, many errors were made both previous to the actual incident and during the incident that contributed to the seriousness of it, human errors on the part of the people working there.
Okay. How about now? Do you think they're in control now?
I would not have much confidence if the situation were such that the government and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission had, in essence, pulled out and said to Med-Ed, okay, you've got a green light, go ahead and do mm-hmm. what you want. I I don't have any particular qualms right now because I know that every move that is made in regard to Three Mile Island is going to be placed under a microscope, practically, and completely examined. And if and when that facility ever opens again, I believe that it would open only under greatly increased safety conditions. And that inspires a fair amount of confidence. At the same time, though, you look around at the recent developments over the past few weeks at Peach Bottom, at the, I forget the name of the nuclear site right outside of Philadelphia. It's down in Jersey, I guess, and there have been a couple of uncontrolled releases of radiation or this or that, and, you know, I just wonder, are we really learning much from this or making much progress? I think one of the things that Three Mile Island has done, at least, is to create a kind of a Watergate effect. What I mean there is that I think for the next couple of years, anything that happens in a nuclear reactor that appears to be even slightly out of the ordinary will be reported and discussed and publicized, just as a lot of things were about government irregularities in the aftermath of Watergate. Many of these things probably would have escaped attention and gone unnoticed had they occurred prior to Three Mile Island. But now, with everybody's sensitivity heightened, they will be illuminated in the public image. This may contribute to a tightening of regulations and things like that, which could only be beneficial.
Okay. Were you worried about the situation at all when it first happened?
Sure, I was worried about it. I was dealing basically from a position of ignorance about what could happen. I never had any serious feelings of my impending demise or anything. You know, I never felt that way about it. I guess I never believed that there would be any kind of an explosion, you know, a nuclear explosion that would wipe out half of central Pennsylvania. I felt that there was certainly the possibility that radioactivity could leak out in fairly substantial quantities and therefore cause a situation that would be damaging to people's health, either short range or long range. And that was a worry, certainly. But I never felt that, I felt that was a potential that could happen, possibly, not really knowing what the full implications were. But I never felt during the actual situation that we were in any particular danger here.
Okay. You said you didn't really think of your own death or that of others either?
No, because I honestly did not believe at that time that the situation was serious enough to that would be even a possibility.
Okay, so you felt that you would survive.
Yes.
What would worry you the most? What did worry you the most?
I guess more subtle implications, possible health problems. Obviously, radiation is not something to treat casually or just fool around with. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of health implications. And I guess what I felt would the worst case implications would be a fairly large level dose of radiation would we'd be exposed to it, and that, you know, 20 or 30 years down the road, this would have implications for a lot of people, myself probably included. And I saw that as being a sort of the worst case possibility in this situation. And I was worried because I felt, obviously, in this position, a responsibility for the 1,600 students who were here, and making sure that they were evacuated if that became necessary. Just dealing with all of the anxieties and reactions that occurred in our student population. And worried about an evacuation situation, too. I think the possibilities of people being hurt or property being damaged or vandalized or whatever was significant if there had been a large-scale evacuation. Panic situation, a lot of people would have panicked in that kind of a situation. All you have to do is look at the way people reacted to gas lines and magnify that probably 10 times, and you would have had people killed, injured. A lot of property probably would have been stolen, damaged, broken into, and so forth. And I think, actually, the implications of an evacuation were probably far worse than, over the short run at least, than the problem at Three Mile Island. And I think the situation was assessed that way correctly by the Thornburg administration, among others.
Okay. You said that you felt certain responsibilities toward the students. Did you feel any other responsibilities?
That was the primary one, I think. I never had any thoughts of evacuating myself or leaving myself. Number one, because I didn't feel that there was a danger and that it was necessary. Number two, because even if it had been necessary, I saw it as my responsibility to make sure that I was here until the last student left. And it was also a lot easier for me to feel that way, I think, because I didn't have the immediate conflict of a family situation where I had to be concerned about a wife and or children. And their safety and well-being and so forth, which a lot of the other people on the staff had to think about and probably caused more of a conflict for them in terms of their grappling with the issue of personal safety and family safety versus job responsibility. That wasn't nearly as much of a problem for me because I didn't have any family in the immediate area. It's just me. So right from the start, my particular concern was the responsibility of this position and making sure that we were keeping students informed, that we were doing whatever we could to facilitate students getting away from the area if they felt they had to, and of course thinking about and dealing with the possibility of having to evacuate the whole place.
Did you find any kind of conflicts with any responsibilities that you had?
No, I wouldn't say so.
Okay, you're starting to say something about how your job may have been affected. You were saying how you'd stay in the area and that type of thing. But in what ways was your job really affected?
Well, of course, it was affected substantially because we simply were reduced to a crisis management kind of environment. People were here around the clock, literally. Nothing else got accomplished during that time. All normal routine was completely interrupted. So it affected everybody's job in that sense. It was virtually impossible to conduct any kind of normal business. And that's always a particularly busy time of the year for me anyway because of RA training and housing concerns coming up and all of that stuff. And it really affected our entire spring because we, in effect, lost a week and a half of time there to normal kinds of things because most students left for a week it was very difficult even then. Once the crisis kind of settled down and everybody felt a little more relaxed about things by Tuesday of the following week, it was still very difficult to do the normal kinds of things because there just weren't the people here. Meetings were suspended because nobody was here to attend them. Classes weren't going on. I couldn't communicate very effectively with people that I needed to talk to about things, so everything just kind of tended to drift for a week and a half. Then, as the students were returning, I left for several days to go to a conference, which had been scheduled for a long time. Mm-hmm. So, in effect, and both Dean Carson and I went, and you know, we lost about 2 weeks of prime time. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the semester, from the middle of April till graduation, was just tremendously intense and pressure-packed because of that lost time. We had to compress 8 weeks into 6 weeks, mm-hmm. And there was a lot going on at that point anyway. This was also obvious to the general student population also. Mm-hmm. I think people tended to look at radiation break, or nuclear break, as they called it, as a holiday.
Right.
Once they got out of here and got out of the anxiety situation, people went to Florida, they went home and relaxed. And first thing you know, they began to realize about the third or fourth week in April that the semester was coming to a close. The amount of work hadn't changed, just the time in which to get it done. And there was a lot of pressure on everybody around here, I think, for those last 4 or 5 weeks of the semester.
Did you make any kinds of, or was your work changed in that you had things to do that you normally wouldn't have had to do?
Very little in that regard. I'm sure other people would have been affected to a greater extent with that. But the situation itself, other than the immediate few days and coping with the crisis atmosphere, in the longer range view of the thing, it did not change particularly what I had to accomplish.
Okay. Did you have any ideas about maybe a code of behavior that might apply in a situation like this, either moral, ethical, or religious?
Yeah, I suppose so. If I am interpreting this question correctly, I think first and foremost I saw a responsibility, a personal responsibility, and I think I would generalize this also to the general population of the campus. Responsibility to be honest, as honest as we could be personally in being able to relay information to other people and to be helpful to other people, particularly students, of course, because that's our constituency. To be contributing to managing the situation in whatever way each of us could uniquely. In other words, I felt rather strongly that that employees of the college had a very definite responsibility to be here, to be coping with the situation and contributing to solving it in whatever way individually we could do that. This tended to make me a little bit short with people who left. Although I tried to understand some of their reasons for doing so, I guess I felt a sense of responsibility that transcended that personal convenience, and felt that everyone else should feel that also. And most people did. Most people responded very admirably, I think, to the situation. I guess I tended to differentiate between staff and faculty and student responsibilities. For example, the RAs. I felt no particular need to have them stay if they didn't want to. I appreciated anyone who did because I used them quite a bit to relay information and to help me, you know, try to gauge what the situation was in the residence halls and things like that. But I didn't feel necessarily that responsibility extended to them because, I guess because I felt that they were, they're not really full-time employees after all. They're not in a position where we can expect too much from them. And I felt that was probably too much to expect that they would all stay. Many of them left and many of them stayed. And, you know, proportionately there were enough RAs around to cover buildings and to deal with the people who remained that I felt the situation was under control there. Even if there had been no RAs who chose to remain, I still would not have tried to coerce or pressure any of them into staying. They hadn't felt comfortable with that. So that was sort of a differentiation there, I guess. Staff, I felt much more, much more strongly about their responsibilities and the fact that they should be around.
Did you change any of your ordinary routines?
Well, I was here even more than I usually am. It was an interesting weekend because it was also the time that I had arranged to move from my apartment to my house. So my routine was totally disrupted anyway because I was right in the middle of moving. In fact, Saturday of that weekend was the day that I was going to move all my furniture and finally get out of the apartment. It was the last day of the month. I had already given notice that I would be out that day. And it was a very difficult situation because I was completely disrupted in my own personal routine anyway. Everything was in boxes that I owned. Half my stuff was at the house, half of it was at the apartment. I was living at the apartment, but my phones were no longer connected there. They were hooked up at the house over that Friday particularly. And that caused me more anxiety than the situation itself because I was concerned about being out of touch, about being away from here part of that weekend because I had those personal obligations to try to take care of. I felt a little guilty about that because I felt I should be here more than I was, particularly on Friday and early Saturday. The situation was I got into the house on Saturday. I never even had time to even go to a grocery store until Tuesday. You know, I was completely disrupted, basically. Not just because of this situation, but the combination of this and my own move. It was a real dislocation.
Okay. Were you thinking, you weren't really thinking at all about leaving the area for yourself?
No. Okay. Never considered it. In fact, you know, I was thinking about the situation, if it got even worse, My decision had been to, I was going to stay until the last student had left here. That was part of my responsibility. And I think I would have gotten out at that point. In fact, I would have seen it falling to me more so perhaps than a lot of other people to even accompany some students who might have to be evacuated to an area where they were not able to get to family and friends and things like that. In other words, if we'd been evacuated to some sort of a central point in the mountains to the west or something, and found ourselves living in a gymnasium or an arena of some kind, or, you know, some temporary shelter that was set up, that it would probably be fairly important that somebody accompany people like who were in that situation, students who were in a situation of, you know, being probably upset, concerned about their personal safety, and essentially alone. A lot of other people would have had to try to deal with their own families and things like that, as well as the situation here, and my being freed of that kind of responsibility, I saw it as being fairly likely that, you know, that I would be on a in a situation where I could be going with a group of, say, 20 or 30 students on a bus or something. You know, I don't even know what ultimately we would have done about transportation and things like that for an evacuation, but presumably there would have been some kind of arrangements like that made. And that would have been a way I could have been useful. But I wouldn't have done that until I was sure that everybody was away from here. You know, in other words, I might have been the captain of the last bus, you know, to leave from here. And that was really what was in my mind, and what I saw as a responsibility. And, of course, it never came down to anything like that, so.
Okay, let me turn this one over. What you might track if you got to the point of going off in a bus?
That thought crossed my mind briefly, because I guess it was Friday and Saturday when evacuation was most talked about, and when it appeared more likely than at any other time. And of course, everything I own was packed at that point, and it was the most anxiety that I had. Was first of all being out of touch temporarily when my phones were being reestablished at the house, and then being so up in the air myself and thinking, if I have to try to grab some personal possessions here, particularly clothes and things, and get out of here, how in the world am I ever going to find what I need? Because it was all in 6 different boxes and a couple of different suitcases, and you know, that caused me more anxiety than anything else in the whole situation. I thought, oh, if we have to evacuate, you know, tomorrow, meaning Saturday, I don't know what I'm going to do here. By the time I'd gotten to Sunday, the same situation somewhat existed, but at least everything was at the house then. I had moved everything into one location, and I knew pretty much where to find essential things like that. So, from that point on, I had no particular worries about that, and I never did pack anything or have a suitcase sitting by the door so that I could run in, grab it, and go. It would have taken me a few minutes to get organized, and I thought a couple times about doing that, but I never had any time to do it, so.
Okay. Did you kind of set up in your mind the types of things that you would take with you?
Oh, I don't remember sitting down and going through that point by point. I would have probably packed just as though I were going home for a weekend or something like that, taking the same basic essentials, you know, a few. In fact, knowing the way that I usually am, I probably would have. Even if we had, let's say, been told that we were going to have to evacuate, and I was up here at the office, and I knew I'd have to get home and get a few things and maybe get back here, I probably would have still gone home and stood in front of the closet and attempted to color coordinate the things I was taking. You know? But I just would have packed a few sets of clothes and, you know, toilet articles and things like that, and made sure that I had... my wallet, checkbook, bank book, those kinds of things with me. And that probably would have been it. And I probably would have tried to make sure that the house was locked up and so forth. Everything else was all in boxes anyway, so there was no point in trying to figure out what to take. And there probably wouldn't have been the time to do that anyway.
Okay.
But I didn't sit down and carefully plan out what I was going to take and so forth, it just the thought flashed in my mind, you know, I'll need to think about, I might have to put together a suitcase here pretty quickly.
Okay. Was there anybody in your life that you were watching to decide whether you should leave or when you should leave?
No.
No? Okay. Did you have any kind of mental pictures of what was happening at TMI?
No, I wouldn't say that I really did. Mainly, I guess, because I had so little real knowledge of what the place looked like, what people would be likely to be doing, that it was hard for me to come up with any kind of mental image of, you know, it was, I had a mental, just a vague impression of a tremendous amount of chaos, probably, and a lot of people running around in a rather high state of anxiety. But other than that, I didn't really have much of a picture. Now, I got a lot better picture after I saw China Syndrome.
When did you see that?
I didn't see that until several weeks after the incident.
Okay. Did you think that anything that happened there may have affected your health, either now or in the future?
No, I believe at this point that nothing that happened will have any significant effect on my future health.
Okay. How do you think other aspects of your life may have been affected?
Very little.
Okay.
I have no, I don't think I suffered any particular mental or emotional or psychological effects from this having happened. Even at the time, I think I was a, I know I was operating at a level of increased anxiety for a couple of days there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just a, you had a certain pressure, a certain, just general level of anxiety. More affected, I think, because of the level of anxiety that you see all around you than because I had any internal feelings of being in danger.
Mm-hmm.
People would come in and, you know, someone would come rushing in, usually it was a student. My God, they just announced on the radio that, you know, that we're going to have to evacuate in 20 minutes. Well, your stomach turns over a little bit when you hear something like that, even though I'm saying to myself at the same time, probably not true, you know, we haven't heard anything to that effect. Whenever that, it was interesting to see that whole environment, because it very definitely is true that people are greatly influenced by the state of other people around them. Whether there's any basis for that or not, people tend to respond to the most extreme reaction around them, to some extent anyway. Even if they, you know, even if they try to laugh it off or brush it off, inside you just you know, everything raises up a notch and somebody falls apart in front of you, you know, or has a real extreme reaction, and your own anxiety level just goes up, even though you're not going to react the same way that that person did. And this was happening so often, and there were so many people coming in with false reports, and you know, every time some other report like that came over the airways or something like that, someone else would snap. Someone else would reach their own personal breaking point and say, that's it, I'm leaving, I'm getting out of here. That reinforced everybody else's anxieties who were still trying to hang on. Because, you know, the more people who began to leave here, the more isolated and the more vulnerable the people who remained began to feel. And it just worked on everybody over the course of the period of time from Friday through Sunday. You know, you see, those kinds of reactions are going to take place in all different situations. You know, you see examples of that on a battlefield, for example, where a few people give up and go, and then everybody else is going, well, I'm not going to stay here, you know, it just magnifies and everybody pretty soon reacts to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, did I get that? Let's see. If the worst had occurred, what do you think might have happened?
I guess that depends on your definition of the worst. You mean, what do I think was the worst thing that could have happened
mm-hmm.
at TMI?
Yeah.
Well, I think the meltdown would have been the worst conceivable thing. I never really felt there was any danger of any major explosion.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think that was possible. Because we're not dealing here with the elements of a bomb. We're dealing with the elements of it, but it's not put together
mm-hmm.
in such a way that was the kind of reaction. I thought the worst thing that could happen would be a meltdown, complete meltdown of the core, which would have probably resulted in a lot of radioactivity
mm-hmm.
being discharged into the air, and the implications of that would have been a lot of health problems and a long-range effect, probably some short-range effect for anyone who was very close to the reactor.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt that being this far away, the worst thing that could happen probably would have been a high-level exposure to radiation, which would have caused some problems maybe 10 or 20 years down the road.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly didn't think we were going to be fried or, you know, anything like that, because I didn't think that first of all, I thought that the possibilities of that amount of radiation were pretty remote.
Mm-hmm.
And also that even if that kind of radiation were released, that we would have had enough time to have gotten away, further away from the immediate area, and therefore, of course, reduced the danger of that.
Okay. Did you have any concerns about milk or food from the area?
No.
You didn't drink it anyway?
No, I never had any concerns at all about that.
Did you picture...
In fact, I went out and bought some milk. I continued to have the same dietary habits and everything else that mm-hmm. I had anyway.
Okay. Did you picture in your mind any effects of radiation on life around you?
No.
No.
No, I didn't.
Did you think of God during the incident?
Yes. Not frequently, I guess. Not. I don't think that God is someone or something that you call on in an emergency only. Anyway, and, you know, to ask for help in a particular situation, and so I didn't really respond to that any differently than I normally do.
Did you pray at all?
No.
Okay. How do you think you figured in all of this?
I don't think I understand what you mean there.
Do you think he had any kind of I believe that God has an effect on everything that goes on, but do you think he had any kind of special effect that maybe he was trying to teach mankind a lesson or something like that?
I guess I would have to say no.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I guess I don't have a basic belief that everything that happens is divinely inspired.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I have more of a sense that that God exists and has given man a certain amount of latitude and ability to direct
mm-hmm.
his own course of action, both for good and for bad. And that most of the consequences that we endure as a human race are a result of a lot of our own making and our own poor choices of, you know, directions in which to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I suppose I can see very easily how people could interpret it that way as a warning, perhaps, or a, you know, way of saying don't mess around with some things that you don't know enough about, because the consequences are going to be quite severe.
But you yourself don't believe that?
I think I would tend more toward the view that a lot of the things that happen are a product of man's ability to think and reason and do things for himself, which have both good and bad consequences.
Okay. Did you attend a religious service during the crisis?
I was here too much. I did not have a chance to do that because I was here 16, 17 hours a day.
Okay. At the time, did the event bring to mind any remembrance of a past event of any type?
No.
How about any historical events?
No, not particularly.
Okay. Did you see it as similar to anything else in your lifetime?
No.
Do you think that it was less frightening than, say, something like a flood or a hurricane or even more?
I would say quite a bit less for me. Because I didn't feel that I was really in any danger.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with something like that, there is a very real and present danger. For some people, I guess that would have been less frightening because it was more known.
Mm-hmm.
The unknown part of this was scary for a lot of people. They didn't really know what to expect or what was going to happen. And that was far worse than any immediate physical danger that they were in. But I felt that I understood pretty much the parameters of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, given that I'm not a scientist and don't know a lot about nuclear physics and things, I still felt that I understood what was happening in a general sense and what the possible implications of that were, and I didn't feel that they were that much.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me it was a much less anxiety-producing situation than would be, say, a tornado
mm-hmm.
or a hurricane or a major fire of some kind or something where the danger is very real and very immediate.
Did any television shows or movies or anything like that come to mind?
Well, certainly China Syndrome.
What made you think of that?
Well, the obvious parallel there, the being so close to reality, and of course, I hadn't seen the movie at that point, but there was an awful lot of publicity about it and the coincidences that were involved, even to the point of them saying in the movie the line about if this thing goes, it could take an area the size of Pennsylvania. You know, it was just so ironic and so coincidental. Parallels were so strong that it was a very obvious connection there. I think one of the other things that came to mind for me was the book Failsafe.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I saw the situation as anything like the same, but mm-hmm. because my feelings were that, you know, here is another supposedly foolproof situation that has been screwed up
mm-hmm.
and that has been shown to be anything but foolproof.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a parallel in that regard there, and the image of Failsafe, the book, came to mind. Other than that, nothing specific.
Okay.
Those two.
Did you find yourself singing any songs?
I don't have much of a singing voice. No, I don't think in particular. Nothing except the songs that I would normally have found myself attracted to at that time. I listened to a lot of music, and mm-hmm. particularly popular music, and So, you know, I'm always kind of aware of songs that I particularly like that are currently popular, but nothing that would have applied to this situation.
Did you have any daydreams at the time that you remember?
Not anything that I really remember, no.
Okay. Any sleeping dreams?
No. Okay. I was so tired when I got home, I don't remember dreaming much at all. I just crash for about 5 or 6 hours and then get up again and go.
So your sleep wasn't really disturbed at all?
No, it was shorter than it might have otherwise been, but it was not, I did not have any trouble sleeping at all.
Okay. Did you see any changes in the people around you because of the incident?
Oh, yes, very definitely. Whole host of reactions. There were a lot of people who really went off the deep end with things. And it was interesting to observe how people, the different reactions that people have to a crisis situation. There were the extremes of supreme indifference, at least on the surface. And the hysterical kind of reaction of get me out of here, you know, unwillingness to believe anything that they were being told, very much just reacting on an emotional level, emotional basis. There were other reactions, and my own reaction in many ways was typical of this. A combination of being of observing the situation closely and then dealing with it from a sense of humor. I remember throughout that whole period, you know, my way of reacting and sort of reducing some of the tension and things was to crack little jokes about it, you know, to make remarks about glowing in the dark and things like that, that just, you know, kind of, I think it was a combination of a couple of things. It was sort of a reaction to the overreaction that I felt that I saw in a lot of other people, the hysterical side of things, you know, an attempt to just sort of put all that in perspective and not let it get out of hand. And just a way of reducing some tension once in a while. You know, you just cut the tension a little bit with a joke or a smart remark about something. My sense of humor tends toward that anyway, being, you know, slightly sarcastic or gently cynical about some things. And so that was a way that I had of coping with it. And a lot of other people I found did too.
Do you remember any jokes?
No, because it was, I never do remember jokes of any kind. It's really interesting because people will tell me jokes a lot of times, and I can never remember it to tell somebody else because that's not the way that my sense of humor is. Mine is more contextual, you know, it's a one-liner type situation or a response to something that someone else says. And usually I can't even remember it later on after I've said it, you know, or after someone else has said it. That's the kind of thing that I appreciate the most. There were in fact, I heard a lot of jokes about the whole situation from various sources, and there's only one that has ever stuck in my mind, really. And that was one that Johnny Carson told the first night of the situation. It was either Wednesday or Thursday, the first time it really became apparent on a nationwide basis something was going on. And it was something to the effect of, he said that the supervisor of Three Mile Island had come out and met the press and assured the press that everything was under control and then had excused himself to go home and turn his wife on low beam. You know, and for some reason, that particular one has stuck in my mind. And he told some others that were even better later on, but I can't remember any of them. And, you know, that except for that one, I just really can't remember most of the actual jokes that were told about it. But humor was a way of dealing with the situation for a lot of people, myself included. And then there was other reactions, just an increase in intensity on the part of most people. Everybody, although there were the jokes and little things like that, everyone was much more serious in general in their approach to everything. You know, there was pressure was beginning to show for people. There was, I think, a very good sense of cooperation, but it was also a pressure kind of situation. You know, people were a little shorter with each other in their interaction. Not really a lot of open displays of temper and you know, that kind of, not anything really overt, but just a little less tolerance for diversion. Mm-hmm. And a sense of urgency about everything that was going on. You know, people moved faster, they weren't always necessarily more productive, but they moved faster and they were more attentive to the task at hand than maybe you would be during the normal course of the day, less easily distracted by other things.
Okay.
Those are some of the major reactions that I saw, I think.
Do you think that there were any lasting changes?
For a few people, yes. For most people, no. I think a few people have probably been very, very dramatically affected by this, by what happened. Their own personal reaction was such that this will be a, you know, a benchmark in their lives, either because they will now turn to actively crusading against nuclear power, for example, which may consume a great deal of thought and energy for a long time for certain people. Or because of their own personal awareness of their particular reaction to what they consider to be a dangerous or crisis situation. Some people will, I'm sure, have psychological effects from this. You know, maybe a long-term increase in their own sense of vulnerability or lack of personal safety. For most people, no. I think most people have resumed a pretty much a normal environment. There may be occasional thoughts of the situation, occasional flashbacks to this whole thing. There may be a heightened interest and concern in what's going to happen in, say, the future of nuclear energy in this country. But not to the point where it becomes a consuming interest or a crusading kind of thing.
How about in yourself? Do you think it has any lasting results?
Psychologically, no. Emotionally, no. I would say intellectually, probably yes. I'm much more aware of that whole, the whole issue of nuclear energy and much more concerned about the direction that it will take in the future. What we're going to do about it, which is not to say that I think we should abolish it, but I will be more interested in seeing that a policy is pursued that is properly precautionary.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that's pretty much it, other than joking. Do you remember any joking from any other crises, maybe Kennedy assassination or something like that?
Jonestown.
Jonestown,
there was a fair amount of it. From the assassination situations, not particularly. Most people, I don't think, saw that as a cause to joke. And if they did, some people did, but I recall it as being a much more cruel kind of situation. Jonestown was to some extent too. There were a lot of cruel jokes and things that came out of that. A sort of a Helen Keller type joke, which I always found extremely offensive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of jokes about people would tell jokes about Helen Keller for some reason.
Yeah.
You know, something, for example, how did Helen Keller burn her hands? You know, she tried to read a waffle iron, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Really cruel and offensive kind of humor, and that's the kind of thing that tended to occur, if it occurred, in a situation like the Kennedy assassination, Martin Luther King assassination, or even Jonestown. This type of situation allowed more latitude,
mm-hmm.
you know, the glow-in-the-dark type of thing. And I got a lot of aftermath of this, too. I went to this conference that I referred to earlier, mm-hmm. about a week and a half after the actual incident. And, of course, I saw a lot of people I knew well from other areas in the country. This was a national conference for student personnel administrators. And a lot of people were giving me a hard time. The three people that I roomed with, for example, constantly made references to my glowing in the dark, you know. We're going to have to find another room. We're going to keep us awake at night and things like this. And I even had one incident during that time where a person called the room, a person I didn't know. And it was a friend of one of the other people that I was staying with in the room. And she asked for him, and of course he wasn't there. Nobody was there except me. And she said, "Well, who is this?" And I told her my name. And she said, "Oh, are you the person who glows in the dark?" And I just went, "You know, you got to be kidding me." Because this, you know, this thing was widespread. And it was a very conscious thing on the minds of a lot of other people. And they make references to this all the time. You know, it's the point where I got a little bit tired of hearing about it by the third or fourth day of this conference. And you know, it was amusing. I mean, it took it all in good humor and everything, and people were making these remarks all the time, and you know, treating it as a humorous kind of situation. And then of course they might later on get down to it and get down below that level and say, "Well, you know, how was it really?
Mm-hmm.
What was going on?" And they were kind of interested in knowing how people 10 or 15 or 20 miles from the situation instead of 500 miles, and of course then completely out of it,
mm-hmm.
We're dealing with and what was really going on at, you know,
mm-hmm.
at ground zero, so to speak.
Okay. Is there anything else that you'd like to say or that I may have forgotten?
No, I don't think so.